I appreciate everybody coming. As you see, that small number. It turns out there's weddings and potlucks and people out of town. But all of y'all, we appreciate you coming. Most of you, probably all of you, might have been here for the first study we had this summer. My father-in-law, Mr. Hutchison, here, and I were going to present opposing views on the covering question, as you might have seen from the advertisement. Let you hear both sides. And basically, I believe that there are two coverings that are required by the passage. Some kind of artificial or temporary covering when the woman is praying or prophesying. And I also believe the long hair is necessary. And Papa believes that the long hair is the only covering taught by the passage. So we're going to talk about both of those. And who's Heath? You got a Bible. Y'all got Bibles. Heath, let's begin. And we'll try to read as I go through some of these charts. We're going to read all of verses 2 through 16. So, Josh, you can read 1 Corinthians 11, verse 2. Now, I'm going to have to go pretty fast. I've allotted myself 45 minutes, and I've got 19 charts to get through. So, I'm going to go fast. I'm going to try not to repeat myself. You guys just interrupt me if you have any question, if you don't understand what I'm saying. Say, Pat, what do you mean by that? Okay? And that way I can go fast, and if you don't interrupt me, I'm going to assume that you understand. Josh, read 1 Corinthians 11, verse 2.
Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the ordinances as I declared them unto you.
The first thing I want you to notice is that what Paul, he's introducing this section here, he's complimenting them for keeping the ordinances. And he's talking about the covering. So he's basically about to talk about the covering, whatever it is, Papa. And he's saying, I commend you because you're doing this. You know, most things in 1 Corinthians he's criticizing them for, but this is something he's complimenting them for. The ordinances. What he's doing in verses 2 through 16 then, is this is something they're already practicing, and they already knew to wear this covering, but he's going to tell them the reasons for the covering. And there's about 5 or 6 or 7 reasons. So they're already doing this, whatever the practice is, they're already doing it. He's commending them for that, complimenting them for that, and he's going to tell them the reasons. Now, I want you to notice, it's an ordinance, which means it's something ordained by God, a law ordained by God. It's not like, and everybody turn to 1 Corinthians 7, I'll try to do this briefly. It's not like what we see in 1 Corinthians 7, which is some temporary thing. In 1 Corinthians 7, you guys will remember, Paul is recommending, and it's an inspired recommendation, that people remain single for the present distress. Let's notice 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 6 through 9, Paul says, but I speak this by permission and not a commandment. For I would that all men were even as myself, but every man hath his proper gift of God, one after this manner, and another that. I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. But if they cannot contain, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn. So he's saying, I think you ought to try to stay single. But if you can't contain, it's okay to marry. It's not a sin. Now, if we turn over to verses 25 through 28, we get a little more information. And basically, He does this about 4 times, maybe 5 in this chapter, and I'm only going to read twice. Verse 25, now concerning virgins, I have no commandment of the Lord, yet I give my judgment as one that hath obtained mercy of the Lord to be faithful. So it's not a commandment, it's not required, it's his judgment. He says, I suppose therefore that this is good for the present distress. I say that it is good for a man so to be. Art thou bound unto a wife? Seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from a wife? Seek not a wife. But if you marry, thou hast not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she hath not sinned. Nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh, for I spared you. So he doesn't have any problem with saying, this is because of the present distress, something that's temporary, probably extra persecution going on, so that if you look at the whole chapter together, you'll see that if you're married to somebody, you have to be concerned about your spouse, not just yourself. If you're worried about them persecuting your spouse, you might compromise your faith. He says, so during this time of present distress, I think I recommend that you stay single. So you won't have that extra temptation, that extra persecution possibility. He said, but it's not a commandment. If you marry, you haven't sinned. You see that Paul's teaching something temporary there because of something that was going on there temporary. It wasn't something that was required. Now, in contrast to that, in 1 Corinthians 11 verse 2, he calls this an ordinance. And we're going to go through these reasons for the covering that Paul gives, and you'll see it's nothing like 1 Corinthians 7, where he says it's because of something going on locally or some temporary thing. It goes back to the creation. It's a permanent thing. It's an ordinance, something, a law ordained by God. So the first reason given for the covering, he read verses 3, and then you can tell where I want you to stop, through 5a, because this is where the headship part is. Well, let me mention, in 1 Corinthians 11, 3 through 5a, this teaches that a woman ought to be covered when she prays or prophesies because the order of headship. Watch this. Read that, Heath.
But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. But every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered, dishonoreth her head.
Right there. So you see, what he's saying is that the man is the head of the woman. So if the woman prays or prophesies uncovered, she dishonors her head, meaning man. Now, that's the reason for the covering. The reason for the covering is headship. And I ask, is man still the head of woman? Now, many of our liberal brethren, and I mean members of Churches of Christ, say no, male headship was just cultural. Does that sound familiar? They say male leadership was just cultural. So they allow women preachers and elders. But I believe you'll agree with me that man is still the head of woman. And since the covering requirement is based upon that headship principle, since man is still the head of woman, the Bible would then still say that if a woman prays to God uncovered, she dishonors her head. That is man. I'll point out that we can't just pick and choose what we want. You can't have headship with the covering. Without the covering, they stand or fall together. We're going to notice some more about that in a moment. And then we'll go ahead and read the rest of verse 5. This is where the covering is compared to shorn or shaven head, verses 5b through 6. This is where it teaches that a woman ought to be covered because to be uncovered is shameful like being shorn or shaven. Okay?
For that is one and the same as if her head were shaved. For if a woman is not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it is shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaved, let her be covered.
We do this in preaching a lot. We're trying to teach people they can't cheat on their taxes. We might say cheating on your taxes is like robbing a bank. In other words, you compare something that's in question to something everybody will agree with. That's what Paul's doing here. His audience at that time would agree that shorn or shaven head on a woman was wrong, and so he says being covered is like that. It's just as shameful as that. He's arguing the question that he's going for, covered or uncovered, and he's doing it based upon something they all agree with. And so I ask, is it still a shame for a woman to be shaven? I think everybody would agree that it is. Therefore, the Bible still teaches it is likewise a shame for a woman to be uncovered when she prays or prophesies. And you see this in the King James, it says, but if it be a shame, actually, he's not really asking us, is it a shame or not, if. It's if in the sense of sin, S-I-N-C-E. Like in Colossians 3:1, in the King James says, if you then be risen with Christ, it basically says you ought to live like him. Well, it doesn't mean if. He's talking to Christians. They have. He means since you be risen with Christ, you ought to live like it. That's what he's talking about there. He's saying, but since it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. So I submit to you that since it's still a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, since the covering is based upon that, the women ought to be covered when they pray today. And then James read verse 7, which teaches that a man, we've been talking about the woman so far, that a man should not wear a covering because he is in the image and glory of God, while the woman is the glory of the man. James?
For man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God, but woman is the glory of man.
So, you see the difference? Man is in the image and glory of God, but woman is in the glory of man. Has anything changed about this reason for the covering? James? You think that's changed? No, man's still in the image of God. Woman's still in the image of a man. I submit to you that God still recognizes this fact of creation when assigning man and women their roles. And therefore, since the covering is based upon this, the covering still applies today. You see that Paul is basing the covering based upon, he's given reasons for the covering, and these reasons are permanent reasons. They're not like what we read in 1 Corinthians 7, where he recommended that they stay single because of the present distress. It's not like that. And then this is an important one I want you to notice. I said we would come back to about women preachers and male leadership. 1 Corinthians 11, verses 8 through 9 teaches that a woman ought to have the covering because of what we call the reason, the order of creation. I didn't come up with that term, but that's what people have termed that reason, the order of creation. Michael, read verses 8 through 9.
For a man is not for woman, but woman for man. Nor was man created for the woman, but woman for the man.
So Paul is saying here that the woman ought to be covered, when she prays, and the man ought to be uncovered because the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Referring, I think we would all agree, to Eve being taken from Adam. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. The woman was created, Eve was created for Adam. Now, what I want to do is I want to compare that to 1 Timothy 2:11 through 13, because I'm going to suggest to you that the same reason is given to prohibit women preachers. 1 Timothy 2:11 through 13 teaches that a woman should not be I'll call it a pulpit preacher, because of the order of creation, the same reason. Anthony, you want to read verses 11 through 13?
Let the woman learn in silence without subjection, but I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. For Adam was first born, then Eve.
So he's saying that he suffer not, in the newer translations would say allow not. He does not allow a woman to teach nor usurp authority over the man. And what's the reason, Anthony?
The reason is Adam was formed first.
Adam was formed first, then Eve. Isn't that the order of creation? Isn't that the same as the reason we see in verses 8 and 9? Look at verses 8 and 9 up there. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. Here's the same reason. For Adam was first formed, then Eve. Here's what I'm saying. The reason given for the prohibition against women preachers, and we know it's also prohibited in 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35, but the reason given here for the prohibition against women preachers is the same reason given for why a woman ought to be covered and a man shouldn't be covered. It's the same argument for both injunctions, as I say in my notes here. So I suggest to you that if the covering is not still binding, then consistency would demand the acceptance of women preachers. Does everybody follow my point? Y'all see my point? If you have the same reason for both, here's the reason that a woman ought to be covered. Here's the reason you shouldn't allow a woman to preach. You have the same reason. If one is just cultural or temporary, then that would make the other one cultural or temporary. And they actually had a forum at Freed Hardeman College in 1990 where they basically made this point. The women preacher advocates argued the prohibition against women preachers was only because of the culture of that time. These are Christians, gospel preachers, saying that the prohibition against women preachers was only because of the culture of that time. Now, Ralph Gilmore was a preacher there that didn't believe in women preachers, a gospel preacher. He says these scriptures are not tied to culture. He's talking about the verses on women preachers. He says they are tied to creation. I do not know how they can say this is a cultural matter when at least two instances and probably three instances is tied to creation, it's tied to creation, it's tied to creation. 1 Timothy 2:11-15 is not cultural because it says the woman came from the man and the woman was deceived into transgression. That's what Ralph Gilmore said in support of the fact that it's still wrong to have women preachers, that it was not just a cultural thing. Now, Lynn Mitchell was a gospel preacher there who's in favor of women preachers and elders. And here's his reply to that. He says in 1 Corinthians 11, Paul bases his discussion on whether women should wear veils on the doctrine of creation and the order that exists between God and women. You see his point? He's saying you guys aren't consistent. You guys are saying this is the reason women can't be preachers, and you're saying they can't be preachers today. And he's the one that thought women could be preachers because it was just cultural. And he says, but the same reason is given women ought to wear veils today. But you guys don't believe that. You don't believe women ought to wear veils today. I think Lynn Mitchell has a very valid point. These guys like Ralph Gilmore, we're inconsistent. They were inconsistent. It's the same reason for the covering as it is against women preachers. You can't have one without the other. And then, Papa, how much time do I have?
31.
Huh?
31.
You say 91?
30. Yeah. 253. 31.
And then 1 Corinthians 11, verse 10. Josh, you want to read 1 Corinthians 11, verse 10? 1 Corinthians 11, verse 10 gives us another reason for the covering. It teaches that a woman ought to be covered because of the angels. Read verse 10, Josh.
For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels.
And the American Standard Version says power, says a sign of authority. That helps us understand what he means there. The woman is to have a sign of authority. I think it's talking about the covering on her head because of the angels. Now, I ask you young people, has anything changed about this reason for the covering? Because of the angels? No. nobody even really knows for sure exactly what this is referring to. It doesn't elaborate enough for us to know for sure what he means by because of the angels. Now, there's two or three or four different ideas, I've seen, but no way anybody could be sure. How can you know that this reason doesn't apply anymore if you don't even know for sure what it is? And we really don't have to know what it is. It's not necessary to know Paul's point. Paul's point is that the woman ought to be covered when she prays because of the angels. We don't have to know exactly what he meant by that. What we have to know is that he's telling us they ought to be covered. That's all we have to know. Now, Papa, you got your Bible open?
Yes.
Read verses 11 and 12. I'm making sure we cover all the verses in verse 16.
Nevertheless, neither is the woman without the man, nor the man without the woman in the Lord. For as the woman is of the man, so is the man also by the woman. But all things are of God.
You see, when you look at what we saw in verse 7, a man ought not cover his head, for he is the image and glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. And then the order of creation, how that the man was created first and the woman was created for the man. Do you see how Mr. Anthony over here might get the big head after he saw all that about how great he was, that he's created the image of God, but not woman. She's created the image of man, and the woman was created for the man. So verses 8 through 11 are to keep Anthony and me from getting the big head. It's basically saying, before you guys get the big head, you wouldn't even be here if you didn't have a mother, you know, if it weren't for a woman. So don't get the big head. And then, and this is where Papa and I are going to differ, but I want to explain to you what I think verse 15 is saying, what the argument is. So 1 Corinthians 11, 13 through 15, I believe, teaches a woman ought to wear the artificial covering because she is the one given the natural covering of long hair. So read that for us, Heath, verses 13 through 15.
Judging yourselves, is it comely, that a woman praying to God uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him? But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering.
Okay, comely is the way I usually say that. Or we, the newer translation might say proper. Is it proper that a woman pray unto God uncovered? Here's what I believe that Paul is doing here. I don't believe he's telling us when he said her hair is given her for a covering. I don't believe he's telling us, identifying what the covering is that he's been talking about, but I believe it's a consistency argument, just like he's done before. Remember, like, for example, when he said you ought to be covered, because if you don't, it's just as bad as being shorn or shaven. I think it's a consistency argument. He's asking these folks to judge. I want you to judge yourself whether or not you should wear this covering. He says, basically, if you look at the natural covering, who is given the covering, the male or the female? The female. So when it comes to the artificial covering, it ought to be the female that's covered, not the man. The same as the natural covering. Now I want you to look at this in detail. He's asking them to judge based upon a fact. Based upon a fact. Alright? The fact is, her hair is given her for a covering. That's the fact. He's not asking them to judge that, whether that's true or not. He's giving them the fact that the hair is given for a covering. Based upon that fact, he's asking them to judge based upon whether or not they should wear this covering. It's not going to be the same as the fact. This is the fact. The hair is given for a covering. Now judge whether or not a woman should be covered. That's going to be something different. He's using this fact to argue for this requirement. Judge in yourselves. Should a woman be covered when she prays? Well, the way you're going to judge is you're going to look at a fact. The woman is the one given the long hair. She's the one given the natural covering. That should help you judge based upon this other question. So I believe Paul's argument is essentially this. God has given women, not men, long hair as a natural or permanent covering. That ought to tell us that when it comes to the artificial covering, God wants the woman covered, not the man. But I suggest to you at this point, are women still supposed to have longer hair than men today? I say yes. Therefore, the argument would result in this. Then the veil is still required today. But many will say, but Paul said it was a custom. So let's deal with that. In 1 Corinthians 11, verse 16, Paul said, but if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom. And then he goes on to say, neither the churches of God. But verse 16 is not saying that this covering requirement that he's been talking about for about first 14 verses was just a custom, a cultural thing. You don't have to worry about it. 1 Corinthians 11, 16 is saying that if a man would oppose God's covering teaching, if any man seemed to be contentious, the apostles and all the churches had no such custom or practice as his, the contentious man's. such would naturally refer back to the last thing mentioned, that is, the contentious man's custom or practice. For example, I debated Keith Sharp on this question. Am I talking too loud? Is that what you're doing? I debated Keith Sharp on this question. He believed the covering was just a custom thing. This must have been about 10 years ago. Well, he's follically challenged. What would that mean, Josh? He's follically
bald.
He's bald. So I have this illustration just to be humorous. And, you know, in debates, you need to have a few humorous things to kind of break up the tension. I said, Keith is bald, but I have no such problem. Now, who had the problem, Anthony? If I said, Keith is bald, but I have no such problem, who am I saying has the problem?
I would say probably you would. Wait, hold on.
Keith is bald, but I have no such problem.
Oh,
who's got the problem?
Oh, Keith.
Keith's got the problem. So that's the same thing with this verse. If any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom. Well, you could have translated that practice. The one who has the custom is the one who's being contentious, not Paul. If any man, if Keith is bald, but I have no such problem. If any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, no such practice is what that contentious man is contending for. And then this next quote I got from my brother-in-law, Jeff Smelser, I think he makes a good point. He said, it makes no sense at all to suppose that after arguing for 14 verses from the relationship of God to Christ, Christ to man, and man to woman, and from the order of creation, Paul would finally dismiss the importance of the whole thing, saying in essence, if you don't like what I said, that's all right, because it's really all just a man-made custom. Jeff's right, that just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, that he would spend all this time giving these permanent reasons for this, and then at the end, in the last verse, saying, well, if you don't like it, don't worry about it. No, in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 37, Paul said, the things I'm writing to you are the commandments of the Lord. So, actually, when you understand what that verse is saying, it's an argument that the covering still applies today. Read the verse again. If any man seem to be contentious, we have no such practice or custom, that is, no such practice that the contentious man is contending for, neither the churches of God. In other words, all our practice is uniform, that what I've been teaching in these 14 verses, it's not just me or it's not just this church, but it's all the churches teach the same thing, the opposite of what the contentious man was contending for. It's just like 1 Corinthians 4:17. He said, as I teach everywhere in every church. Chapter 7:17, so ordain I in all churches. Chapter 14:33, for God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints. All three of these places in verse 16, what he's really saying is what I've been teaching you is universal to all the churches. Don't think I'm just putting something on you that nobody else has to do. That kind of makes you mad. Whenever Josh and Heath think I'm telling them to do something but nobody else in the family has to do it, they don't like that. They get perturbed. And that's what maybe these Christians were thinking here. Well, you're putting something on us. And Paul's saying, it's not just you, it's everybody. All the churches of God have this practice. 1 Corinthians 11, verses 2 through 16 was written according to chapter 1, verse 2, the second verse in the whole book, it was written of the church of God which is at Corinth, and a lot of people think that's the only church it was written to. No. With all that in every place call upon the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. That's not just the church at Corinth. This book was written to the church at Corinth and everybody who calls on the name of Jesus Christ. That's all Christians. That's who this covering requirement applied to. All Christians. Now, as you know, a lot of people say, but the scholars, and they're referring to commentaries, the scholars say it was just a custom. I want y'all to know that almost all of these books that are written that say that something was what was going on back then in history, when they're not inspired, these guys lived in about 1700, 1600, 1800. They, a lot of times, don't have any more idea what was going on back then than you do. They sometimes just extrapolate from what they see in the Bible and suppose what was going on back then. But be that as it may, you've heard a lot of people say, oh, but the commentators or the scholars say it was just a custom back then, but they only show you one side. I want to show you about four or five scholars that say this was not the custom. What Paul was saying was not the custom back then. For example, Cambridge Bible for Schools and Colleges says, in the remarkable fact that the practice here enjoined is neither Jewish, which required men to be veiled in prayer, nor Greek, which required both men and women to be unveiled, but it's particular to Christians. W.E. Vines says about the same thing. The injunctions were neither Jewish, which required men to be veiled in prayer, nor Greek, by which men and women were alike unveiled. the apostles' instructions were the commandments of the Lord and were all for all the churches. And then under unveiled, he says, among the Jews, the heads of the men were covered in the synagogue. Among the Greeks, both men and women were uncovered. Expositors, Greek Testament. Paul's instructions do not agree with current practice. Jewish men covered their heads. Amongst the Greeks, both sexes worship with uncovered heads. And there's some more quotes here, but these quotes are all consistently saying that when the Jews prayed, the men, or either in worship, the men covered their heads, and when the Greeks were worshiping, the men and the ladies were uncovered. And they're all saying that's different than what you read about in the text, and it is. Because in the text, he says the men ought to be uncovered and the women ought to be covered. Now, I would admit there are some scholars that say it was just a custom back then and that Paul's instructions match up with the custom. But here you have all these scholars that say it's different than that.
Quick question.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to ask this for a while. I just wait for the right time. But it's not from any scholars. I can see your point of view and I can see your father-in-law's point of view from both ends.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, doesn't it just come down to if it violates your conscience or not? If you feel you should wear one, wear one. But if not, then your hair will suffice for being the covering?
Well, I'll actually listen to Papa, but I believe, no, that there's a hair and a veil that the woman has to wear.
Mm-hmm.
She only has to wear the veil when she's praying.
Mm-hmm.
If she doesn't do that, she's not doing what God told her to do. But we'll talk about that more. I haven't gotten to the long hair part of my speech, and Papa's going to give you the opposing side. Here's what I'd say at the bottom of this chart. I'm going to skip some of these to save time. Since scholars disagree on this, and for that matter, just about every other issue, we're just going to have to accept God's revelation on the matter. Don't let scholars decide things for you. They disagree on this and just about every issue. Since they're disagreed on this, just accept what God's revelation says. One last quote before we move on to my long hair part of my discussion. Godet's conclusion. He's a famous guy, and I'm not using him as proof or anything, but I just like the way he said it. I have to agree with him, and he can say it much more eloquently than me. Here's Godet's conclusion. He who teaches that 1 Corinthians 11 deals with custom will have to get that idea from somewhere other than the text, and he won't get it from scholars if he will take all of them. You certainly can't get it from the text, and if you take all the scholars, you won't get it from the scholars. Here's his argument. Was this conviction solely a matter of time and place, so that it is possible to suppose that if he, that is Paul, lived now and in the West, the apostle would express himself differently? This supposition is not admissible. For the reasons he alleges, Paul alleges, are taken not from contemporary usages, but from permanent facts which will last as long as the present earthly economy. Isn't that what I've been saying? The reasons given for the covering were not from contemporary usages, but from permanent facts, the creation. The physical constitution of women is still the same as it was when Paul wrote and will continue so till the renewing of all things. The history of creation to which he appeals remains the principle of the social state now as in the time of the apostle, and the sublime analogies between the regulations of God to Christ, Christ to man, and man to woman, have not changed to this hour, so that it must be said either the apostle was wholly wrong in his reasoning, or that his reasons, if they were true for his time, are still so for ours and will be so to the end. Okay? One last thing I want to say. There are some people that supposedly don't hold the custom view, but they hold what's called the spiritual gifts view. Mr. Cavender, for example. Mr. Hutchison. And their basic argument, I wish I could spend more time on this, but I'm running out of time as it goes. The basic argument is this. Paul said woman is to pray or to prophesy. And since women don't prophesy today, that means the covering doesn't apply anymore, because he told her to have the covering when she prayed or prophesied. But the simple answer to that is it doesn't just say prophesy, it also says pray. For example, if I said every person riding in or driving a car with belt unbuckled breaks the law, that's the law in Alabama now. That means if you do either, you must be buckled. In verse 13, he doesn't mention prophecy. He just says, if a woman pray unto God uncovered. So even if they're right about the prophecy part, it says that a woman ought to be covered when she prays or prophesies. Perhaps they're right that she doesn't prophesy today, but she definitely prays today. So the spiritual gifts argument won't work. The argument that it doesn't apply today because they don't prophesy today, that won't work because women still pray today. I'll mention this. Sometimes they say, well, the prayer there must be inspired prayer because it's mentioned right next to prophecy. Romans 12, 6 through 8 lists prophecy along with giving, ruling, exhorting, ministry, teaching, showing mercy. Are these all miraculous just because prophecy is? That's not a sound argument. And then Amos 7, 12, I make the same argument, but it's a little more humorous. Amos 7, 12 says, go into Judah and there eat bread and prophesy there. Does that mean eating bread is miraculous just because it's listed next to prophecy? So why would we think prayer is miraculous just because it's listed nearby prophecy in 1 Corinthians 11? Anyway, we better move on, and I'm going to have to move over to a different set of charts. How much time do I have, Papa?
15 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Pop and I we're getting into an in-depth discussion tonight about whether or not the long hair is the only covering. That's what his position is. And mine is that two coverings are required. And one of the arguments I'll make, or one of the points I will make, is there's two different words in the text. There are two different Greek words. You can't really tell that from the King James, but you can from a version like the American Standard Version. I think, and Papa, you may know better than me, but I think they probably translated this way just to let us know there are two different Greek words. You know, the word you see in the King James is covered all the way through, or a form of it. But in the American Standard, you'll see verses 4 through 13 or whatever it is, about 4 or 5 times, they'll translate it veiled, whereas we get down to verse 15, they'll translate it covering. And they may be trying just to let us know that there's a different Greek word. And they're right. All of these up here is the word in the Greek katakalupto, or a form of it. Down here in verse 15, it's parabolaion, a different Greek word. Okay? So I'll let you look at the words. You see verse 5, 6, 7, and 13 have these words in the English, but the Greek is katakalupto. That's got the A in front of it, which means uncovered. Or katakalupto, I don't know how to pronounce that. You see how in the first 5 occurrences, they all forms the word katakalupto. But in verse 15, you have the word parabolaion. Now, it's not just a matter of the same basic word with a different ending, like he runs or he is running. You know, it's not like one's a noun and one's a verb, but they're really the same basic word. These are two completely different words. Okay? But I'll admit this right now. Two different Greek words does not necessarily prove there are two different ideas here. In the Bible, sometimes you have two different Greek words referring to the same thing. Okay? So I'm not using this to argue conclusively that there are two different coverings just because they're two different Greek words. But what I believe is it sure opens up the possibility. If you're reading along in this, and I could see if you're reading from the English and the King James, and you read it the first time, you might come to the conclusion that Papa draws because the word covering is there and it's the same. But if you could read this in the Greek and see there are two different Greek words, you might not come to the conclusion that there's only one covering in the passage. If you see veiled, 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 then you see covered, you might see maybe there are two different coverings because there's two different words being used. And I ask this question. Why did Paul use one Greek word in verses 5, 6, 7, 8, and 13 and then suddenly switch to a completely different Greek word in verse 15? Now, I admit he could have and still be talking about the same thing. I admit he could have. But I asked you, why did he? Why did he? And that brings me to my next chart. This word katakalupto is not in the New Testament that many times. It's in the, aside from 1 Corinthians 11, it's in the New Testament. And I'm talking about, when I say kalupto or katakalupto, I'm talking about forms of that word. I think it's in there 7 times. And none of those times are referring to cloth, meaning fabric, or hair. So we have this word in the Bible a few times. It's not referring to cloth, fabric, or hair. And then kaluma, which would be the noun form of this word, is found in 2 Corinthians 3:13 4 times. And there it is referring to an artificial veil. 3 of those times are figurative, but it's still referring to an artificial veil. And so it's in there a very few times in the Greek New Testament. So what we've done on this chart is we've gone back to the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Old Testament, done 2 or 3 centuries before Jesus came to this earth. And you have that in there many, many times. And in the Septuagint, sometimes there's a few times that are referring to not cloth or fabric, but it'll be something like the people covered the face of the earth. And that's a form of the word kalupto in the Septuagint. But the predominant usage of this word in the Septuagint is it's going to be referring to a covering of cloth or fabric. Let me show you some examples. We'll talk about Esther 6:12 in more detail in a minute, but Numbers 5:18 says, the priest shall set the woman before the Lord and uncover the woman's head. Well, I don't think even Papa would say it's talking about cutting her hair off. And this is katakaluto. Genesis 38:15, she, Tamar, had covered her face. I don't think anybody thinks that's talking about covered her face with hair, but it's talking about some kind of cloth or fabric covering. Exodus 28:42, make them linen breeches to cover their nakedness. That's obviously a linen covering. Numbers 4:5, they shall take down the covering veil and cover the Ark of the Testimony with it. I don't think anybody thinks that's talking about the hair. It's talking about some sort of cloth, piece of cloth. Ruth 4:3, 4, and 7, she came softly, that is Ruth to Boaz, and uncovered his feet and laid down. I think she uncovered his feet. It's not talking about removing any hair, but it's talking about removing some sort of piece of cloth or fabric. And that's predominantly how it's used. As a matter of fact, by my count, a form of the word kalupto, you have kalupto, katakalupto, apo kalupto, katakaluma, kaluma, sun kalupto, sun kaluma. In the Septuagint, 84 times refers to a piece of cloth or fabric, and not one time does it refer to hair. Now, like I say, I don't think two different Greek words necessarily proves there's two different coverings there, but I find it significant that it's used so many times in the Bible, in the Greek translation of the Old Testament, so many times it refers to cloth or fabric, and not one time, as far as I knew, and I checked this out, does it refer to hair. So my conclusion on this chart is, outside of 1 Corinthians 11 in the Bible, kalupto, or a form of it, refers to a fabric covering 88 times. Now, so I'm counting those four times in 2 Corinthians 3. Not once does it refer to a covering of hair. That's outside of 1 Corinthians 11. Now, I want you to compare, Papa, this argument, and you may be the only one familiar with this argument, but you will. I hope some of you will be too. But I happen to make this argument in our Bible study on Sunday morning at church. We were talking about 1 Corinthians 7. We were talking about divorce and remarriage and how that Bales, James Bales, and Homer Haley will use 1 Corinthians 7 where it says, if your spouse deserts you, you're not under bondage in such cases. They equate the word bondage to the marriage bond, and they say, therefore, if your spouse deserts you, you can remarry. Now, they ought to know that's not true because Matthew 19:9 only gives one exception for divorce and remarriage. But if that were the marriage bond, they'd have a point. So I made the point Sunday morning. Tommy asked me to talk about it a little bit. I made this point. And while I'm reading this, I want you to compare it to that quote at the bottom of this chart. I said, outside of 1 Corinthians 7:15 in the Bible, the Greek word translated bondage occurs 133 times, and not once does it refer to the marriage bond. And I think that's good evidence that it's not referring to the marriage bond. Well, here we're looking at the Septuagint, and in the New Testament, kalupto refers to a fabric covering 88 times, and outside of, unless it's in 1 Corinthians 11, it never refers to a covering of the hair. If that's a pretty good argument on 1 Corinthians 7:15, why is it something that's almost exactly the same a good argument in 1 Corinthians chapter 11? Now, as I said, though, I don't think that proves it for sure. Here's the argument I would use and camp on, and I have in debate, that I think proves that there are two different coverings in the passage. We know, here's my point, we know the covering of 1 Corinthians 11 verse 5 is artificial because it is to cover for an occasion. That occasion being when a woman prays or prophesies. Let me give you an everyday illustration. Suppose I told Leah, who has long hair, I hope everybody would agree, she's about to go outside. I said, Leah, be sure and have your head covered when you go outside, possibly cold or something. Do you think I would be telling Leah, well, make sure you don't cut off your hair before you go out there? No, I don't think you'd think that. If I told her to make sure she had her head covered when she went outside, I think you would think I was asking her or commanding her to put on a hat or some kind of artificial covering to protect herself from the cold. And the reason is because I told her to do it when she went outside. And you can't put on the hair as a covering or take it off in that time frame. You can't just, if you're going to grow a long hair covering, it's going to take you much longer time than just going outside. Now here's a Bible parallel to that. Does everybody sort of understand what I'm driving at there? The fact that the covering is told in 1 Corinthians 11:5 to do it when she's praying or prophesying indicates it's not talking about something permanent. She can put on and on while she's praying and then take it off. Or it's possible to do that. And that won't match up with the long hair because that's permanent. Either on there all the time or not on there. Now, here's the illustration from the Bible, Esther 6:12. And it's kind of kalupto, or a form of it. I skipped it a while ago. It says, "And Mordecai came again to the king's gate, but Haman hasted to his house mourning," that M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, "and having his head covered." And I think we can all easily see that that's not talking about having his head covered in the sense of having long hair or hair on his head. That's obviously talking about an artificial covering, and the reason we know that is because it's associated with this thing he's doing, mourning. It's a temporary thing. Since he's going to have his head covered while he's mourning, we understand it must be talking about an artificial covering. It's done for the occasion. Therefore, it doesn't match up with the hair, which is permanent, either all the time or none of the time. So I know the covering of 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5 is artificial for the same reason, because it is to cover for an occasion, that is, when a woman prays or prophesies. Since the long hair does not cover just for an occasion, it cannot be the covering of 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5, so the passage must teach two different coverings. And Anthony, I believe both of them are required. And if we don't have both of them, then we're in sin. Now, I'm going to try to drive this point home with this chart. And the title of this chart is, "It Wouldn't Be Said That Way If It Were Permanent." In other words, it wouldn't have told the woman to be covered when she prays or prophesies if it were talking about a permanent covering. It wouldn't have been said that way. For example, do the following make sense? Ethel, be sure and wear a red dress while at the Alabama football game. Will, does that make sense even though it is an Alabama football game? Okay, you could tell a girl to wear a red dress while at the Alabama football game. That makes sense. But this wouldn't make sense. Ethel, be sure to be skinny while at the Alabama football game. Now, you could ask the girl to get skinny, go on a diet or exercise and get skinny, but it's not going to happen in time for her to go to the Alabama football game. You see? Here's another one. Bobby, be sure and be good while at granddaddy's house on Saturday. That makes sense. Bobby, be sure and be tall, physically tall, while at granddaddy's house on Saturday. That doesn't make any sense. And the reason these things don't make sense is what I'm getting at. These things are permanent. It doesn't make sense to tell somebody to do something that's a permanent thing for an occasion. Karen, be sure and be covered with a hood while outside riding your bike. That makes perfectly good sense. Karen, be sure and have long hair while outside riding your bike. That didn't make any sense. It's kind of like me telling Leah that when she's going outside in the cold, be sure and have long hair. That didn't make any sense. Lucy, be sure and be covered with a veil while praying. That makes sense. Lucy, be sure and have long hair while praying. That doesn't make sense. It wouldn't be said that way. That doesn't make any more sense than these other ones. That's not the way you would say it if you were talking about something permanent. You wouldn't say, be skinny while at the Alabama football game. Be tall while at granddaddy's house. Have long hair while riding your bike. Have long hair while praying. You wouldn't do that. It doesn't make any sense. You wouldn't tell them that. Those are things that are permanent relative to the time frame we're talking about. Now, before I go down to the conclusion here, I want you to notice that the second example is a little different than the others. Bobby, be sure and be good while at granddaddy's house on Saturday. That's something we would say. But you know, we're supposed to be good all the time. So I'm not saying that's the only time granddaddy wants Bobby to be good. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that when he says, Bobby, be sure and good, be good at granddaddy's house, he wants him to be good all the time. But when he says that, that means that it's possible for Bobby to turn that on and off while he's at granddaddy's house. This is something you can change within that time frame. I'm not saying that it's okay to be bad at all other times. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying what this proves is that being good is something you can turn on and off relative to the time frame of going to granddaddy's house. But you can't turn on and off being tall relative to the time frame of going to granddaddy's house. So, down at the bottom, a command to be covered with long hair for an occasion just doesn't make any sense because you can't grow a covering of long hair for just an occasion. The long hair is not a temporary covering, it is a permanent covering. Therefore, I conclude that 1 Corinthians 11 teaches two separate coverings, one temporary, when she's praying, and one permanent, the long hair, all the time. Now, what I've done, this is sort of an oversimplification here, but I think it helps me make the point. Does 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5, it tells a woman to be covered when she prays, does that require the catacalupto covering while working in the vegetable garden? No, it doesn't. While Jennifer's working in the vegetable garden, this verse doesn't tell her she has to be covered. It tells her she has to be covered with the catacalupto covering when she prays. How much time, Josh?
1 minute.
1 minute. Does 1 Corinthians 11, 15 require the parabolaian covering, the long hair in the vegetable garden? Yes, it does. Because that covering is for all the time. So to me, either there's a contradiction in the Bible or two coverings are, or the two coverings are different. Now, this is simply put the same thing by a Pentecostal website I found. He says, if the hair is the covering that the woman should have on her head, and if that is what Paul meant when he spoke of a covering, there would be no reason to write anything because we do not have to preach to women to keep their hair on or put it on when they pray. They keep it on all the time. Now, this is something I really said a while ago about Bobby being good. Let me hasten to say we are not saying cover while praying by itself proves that this is the only time the covering must be worn. There might have been another verse in the Bible that said a woman ought to be covered when she's working in the vegetable garden, and there'd be no contradiction. But when it says that she ought to be covered when she prays, it proves that this is put onable or take offable, that you can put it on in time to go when you pray and then take it off after you pray. It doesn't necessarily mean that's the only time you have to wear it. There could be another passage that says there's another time. I'm hurrying. Whatever I take, we'll give Papa. I'm on my last chart. Here's a chart making the same point, but I'm trying to be humorous. You can turn that off if you know how, Josh. We know the covering of 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5 is artificial or temporary because it is to cover for an occasion when a woman prays or prophesies. I'm just repeating some of the points I just made. It must be put onable and take offable relative to the time frame specified that it should be worn. The long hair is not like that. Here's a Bible illustration. Leviticus 13, 45, and it's kind of funny. And the leper in whom the plague is, his clothes shall be rent and his head bare, and he shall put a covering upon his upper lip and shall cry, unclean, unclean. Well, was the leper supposed to grow a mustache? No. I think we can tell. It's talking about an artificial covering. Because it was something that had to be put onable and take offable relative to the time frame specified. So for the same reason you know that covering in Esther 6:12, Haman's covering that he did had on while he mourned, and for the same reason you can tell this is the artificial covering that he's supposed to put on his upper lip, for the same reason you can tell, I suggest to you that you can tell that 1 Corinthians 11:15, the catacaluto covering, is a temporary covering. Put onable and take offable relative to the time frame specified, and that's different than the parabolaion covering in 1 Corinthians 11:15, which is not put onable and take offable relative to that time frame of prayer. It's either on there all the time or not all the time. Now, let me say one other thing, and in closing, I'm going to go back to the custom position, the position that this was only a covering custom, so you can just forget the whole thing. If this was just cultural, what about women preachers? And we've already elaborated on that. Or the Lord's Supper elements. Or immersion for baptism. If the 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16 covering and long hair requirements are just cultural, how do we know that the prohibition against women preachers wasn't just cultural? I mean, everybody agreed that was the culture of that day, that women weren't allowed to speak in public during that day. Everybody agrees with that. And what about the bread and fruit of the juice and fruit of the vine or juice on the Lord's table? How do we know that wasn't just cultural? Well, wouldn't hamburger and a Coke fit better with our culture and society today in the USA? And how do we know that immersion for baptism wasn't just cultural? Is it culture, one of the arguments that the Methodists make for sprinkling? If this thing, the covering, we don't have to do it anymore, that requirement is not applicable anymore because it was just cultural back then, a custom, how do we know these other things aren't that way? To me, it all just becomes arbitrary, what we believe is binding today. It becomes arbitrary because we can just pick and choose whatever we want to and say, oh, that was just a custom. We don't have to do that. We have to have a good reason. If we're going to say we don't have to do that today, it was just a custom, or there was some temporary reason for it, we have to have a good reason for it. We saw that in 1 Corinthians 7. He said it's because of the present distress. He didn't say because of the distress that's going to last till the end of the world. He said the present distress. We saw that in 1 Corinthians 7. We don't see that in 1 Corinthians 11. He didn't say, wear this covering because of the present distress, something temporary. He said, it's because, and he goes back to headship, he goes back to the image and glory of God. All of these things are permanent reasons. He goes back to the creation, for the most part, and gives permanent reasons for the covering. And that's why I believe that the veil on the woman when she prays, and the long hair all the time, that those apply today, and the woman needs to do it today, because the reasons given for those were permanent reasons. Not temporary reasons, like we saw in 1 Corinthians 7:7. Okay, Papa. How much time did I go over, Josh? Can you keep up with it?
No.